Jen.
Hey, Jeffrey.
You know, I was on iTunes yesterday, and I'm pissed.
Why are you pissed?
They deleted some of our stuff because it's, quote, too old.
It's because we produce so many episodes.
Oh.
They only keep a certain amount. I don't know what that amount is.
So here's the deal.
Yeah.
I talked to Doug. I talked to Nada. And we are going to get some of those episodes back because they were classic.
Love it.
And we're going to set them out again so that our diehards can take advantage of that wisdom that seemingly is off the air, but it's not.
Well, let's do it right now, like with this episode.
Cool. Let's
go. All right. Take a listen.
We start this. And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. This is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling. And I'm joined today by the great
Jen Gluckow, CEO and founder of Sales in a New York Minute.
And author of an upcoming book.
That's
which
true.
We haven't.
I'm not going to disclose the title
okay,
yet.
Okay, it's
but
a deep, dark secret.
It's all in the name.
And we're here today live or alive, depending upon how you want to look at it. Maybe you're in your car because we're not in your car. You're just listening to us. And we're going to give you information, sales information today that will be unbelievably deep. So if you're looking to make that sale that's eluding you at this moment, you have come to the right place. Now, let's say hello to the man behind the curtain. Actually, it's a green curtain. And the man behind the curtain is our producer, the great Doug Branson. Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. A reminder, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die. And if you subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes this week, you will be entered to win a box of delicious muffins from Modern Muffin.
Whoa.
Our guest a few weeks ago.
My favorito.
Yeah, breakfast is on them. Search Sell or Die on iTunes. Leave a short review with your email address included in the review, and you'll be entered to win. We'll announce that winner next week on the show. Jeffrey, Jennifer, what's going on in your sales world?
Just for the record, can we win the muffins?
No. Members of CBS or relatives are not eligible to win the prize.
Oh, man, they're so good.
But we go buy these muffins at retail. That's how good they are. My sales world is pretty interesting. We're traveling, of course. We're going to be going overseas for a week or so. But the sales world seems to be picking up. The economy seems to be a little bit more robust at the moment, and salespeople that have been sitting on potential buys are now making the buys. Salespeople that have budgets for doing training are now opening up those budgets just a little bit. And I think if you're a salesperson out there, now might be the time to intensify not your selling process, but to build your relationships with potential buyers because they're going to have money from now for the next few years.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've seen the pickup in leads and the average number of leads coming in just quadruple.
Yeah,
over the past few weeks. And it's just amazing.
So I would get ready. I would, you know, now's the time. If you've ever thought about subscribing to the Gittimer Learning Academy, now would be your time. Not just for the fact that you're going to be able to take low-hanging fruit, but I want you to get a whole basket of fruit. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is to take advantage of the entire lead process and what your opportunities are and be able to capture them. So what else is going on? Oh, we have a sales machine.
Yeah.
We'll be in New York City.
We'll be in New York.
On June the 14th. You better be there. Sales Machine is the premier sales seminar, gathering, exhibition, networking opportunity. There'll probably be 1,000 people, and I'm going to be doing the keynote. And you'll be seeing me kick some sales butt in the audience. There'll be other keynoters. But I think one of the classic things about Sales Machine, they offer the latest technology of people that are going to – what tools are available to you in the sales world. And there's 1,000 other salespeople, people like you that you can kind of hang out with and talk to and get their feelings for and find out what's happening. And I think it's going to be a happy crowd this year.
I think it's going to be a great crowd. It was really incredible last year, I made some terrific connections, heard some great talks, learned a lot. I love learning. So it was really great. Now, Jeffrey, you might not even know this yet, but rumor has it, you're going to be doing a
private
special event that week for 10 to 15 people.
I heard the rumor.
Do you like when people plan things for you?
Oh, yeah.
It's been requested by some of your biggest New York fans to get together around a round table for you, with you.
So and tell me everything they know?
Well, they want to hear you talk, actually.
One of my favorite things. I love talking to a salespeople. I'm going to be addressing 1,000 people in New York City that already know everything.
Yes, you will. Yes, New Yorkers, we do know everything. Thank
but
you.
But what I'm going to tell them is today is a day to forget that you know everything. Take a couple notes.
But here's the deal. So some of your fans in New York requested that we put together this roundtable when they heard you would be there. And we haven't announced anything officially yet. But if you want to be at that table and there's only 10 or 15 spots, email our producer. What is your email, Doug?
Sell or die at gittimer.com.
Ooh, there you go. That's easy.
What a
sell
voice of God. We have one of the best voices of God.
Yeah,
it's not real deep, but it's real friendly and real approachable.
It's Charlotte.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Anyway, email Doug and he will help you get a seat at the table if there's any left.
So what's going on today? What's our show about today, babe?
We are...
Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Babe.
That's Ms. Babe to you.
Right.
We have an amazing guest on the show today. One of my favorite all-time salespeople. Oh, no, that's the end. We do that later.
No, we don't.
Do you want to do the sales EQ IQ now, Doug? Okay, so delete this whole part, okay? I'm going to start over.
Oh.
So I'll say that's Miss Babe to you. You want to say that part again?
So what's our show about today, babe? Miss Babe.
That's right. That's Miss Babe to you. So we have one of my favorite all-time salespeople, sales instructors, teachers, coaches on our show today. The great author, Jeb Blunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I am in the middle of reading his book, Sales EQ, which if you haven't read it,
it's a sales book that actually makes sense.
It doesn't just make sense. It's written in stories that you can relate to that make you think of your own stories, your own sales stories. And you can pull out from each story that after each story, Jeb tells you the lesson. And it's just incredibly practical. I have one of my followers has been emailing me from another country that he had ordered the book and then he got the book. And now he's sending me a list of all the things he's learning from the book. And it's really incredible to see what people are taking away because it's such an amazing book.
We know Jeb personally. He's approachable. He's affable. He's actionable.
He's a good person.
He's a real good guy. Yeah.
You know, a lot of seem like they could be good guys on stage, and then you meet them. Well, I don't know about you, Jeffrey, but then I meet them, and I'm like, wow, that guy's an asshole, or I really don't want to have dinner with that person. But I actually like Jeb.
Yeah, like who? Yeah.
Well, Jen, just
I'm not going to mention any names.
No, what's it rhyme with?
No, thanks. But Jeb's a really nice guy.
He's a great guy. No, he stays over.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, from all the way from Augusta, Georgia, home of the Masters, please help me welcome the great Jeb Blunt. We are exceptionally fortunate today, but not as fortunate as you're going to be after you hear our next guest. There are some people who claim to be experts, but there are very few people that actually are experts. And today we have with us the great Jeb Blunt. Jeb and I have become pretty good friends, and I asked him, because he spells his last name B-L-O-U-N-T, and I was mispronouncing it Blount, and he said, no, it's Blunt. And I said, well, how many people call you Blount? And he said, only Yankees. And I sort of got my comeuppance then. But if you read anything by Jeb Blunt, you will find that not only is he insightful, but he is actionable. Please help me welcome the great Jeb Blunt.
Woohoo!
Glad you're here, Jeff.
It's great to be back. I listen to Sell or Die every week, and I keep listening to see if I'm on it, but I'm not. So now I'm on it.
Amazing. Wait, it's about time.
Where the hell am I?
I think you were on one of our first shows.
I was. And if you listen to the beginning of your show, I'm laughing in the background. You guys have recorded me. I'm not getting any royalties for that.
That's true.
It is.
It's when we were filming out there. Yeah. Oh, I remember that. Cool. Check.
I paid you in coffee.
And bacon.
And bacon.
Death Wish Coffee was our compensation for Jeb today. And we had to give him more than one bag. But let me tell you something. He's addicted.
And wired.
Well, and good. So will you be. Death Wish Coffee is amazing. But not as amazing as Jeb Blunt. We're going to hear about his EQ book right now because it is a bestseller. It has sold thousands of copies in its first week. Most sales books, by the way, will sell about 7,500 to 10,000 books in their lifetime.
I've actually heard it's lower than that. I mean, I've heard that my publisher says like 3,000 for.
Well, that's because it's Wiley.
Yeah.
Jeffrey.
Don't say bad things about it. They're good people. Know, Matt, Jeffrey did not mean that.
I love that. Okay.
We'll cut that.
No, we're not cutting it. But so how many books did you sell the first week?
We sold almost 7,000 books the first week.
That's amazing. So some people might not know what book we're talking about. It's called Sales EQ.
Right.
And what is EQ?
It's emotional intelligence. So sales EQ is about sales-specific. The Q is silent. it's sales-specific emotional intelligence. And so when you think about emotional intelligence, I have a belief that the emotional intelligence you need as a leader or a spouse or a teacher or a parent, that there are different ways that you apply that. And in sales, emotional intelligence is applied completely different than just about any relationship that you have anywhere in your life because sales is – the relationships we have in sales are artificial, and they're these commercial bubbles that we get into. The salesperson and the buyer are coming together to accomplish something. Typically, at the end of that something, they part. And
either with a yes or a no.
Yes or no, and the salesperson is highly emotional in that environment. The buyer is highly emotional in that environment, and each of them is looking out for their own interest, and each of them wants to get the outcome that's best for them. So it's different than anywhere else that we operate, and which is one of the reasons why it's so difficult for people to operate in sales. And emotional intelligence is all it is basically your ability to control and manage your own emotions, to understand and perceive what you are feeling, rise above that, while at the same time you are responding appropriately to the emotions of the buyer and interpreting their emotions and being able to influence their emotions.
Or engage their emotions.
Mm-hmm. And if we just break it all down into one little piece, if you think about it like this, in every sales conversation – The human being that has the most control of their emotions has the highest probability of getting the outcome that they desire from that conversation.
That's totally cool.
Yeah, that
I want to go back and edit myself. You're either going to get a yes or a no or a not yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are the three things that are going to happen, and some are more emphatic than others.
Exactly.
Sometimes not yet in the South, for example, is a no. They just don't want to tell you no because they're like your friends.
That's
in New
true.
York City, they say no and get the hell out of here. That way you know it's more of an emphatic no.
And in larger deals, in complex deals, sometimes the yes is just a small commitment that you're asking mm-hmm. someone to make.
Yeah.
May I have this piece of information? Maybe move to the next step. Sometimes those yeses and nos are coming from different people with different levels of influence on the deal. But all of that is emotional. And if you think about the way – and I know Jeffrey – just if you ever listen to the way Jeffrey operates, you're all about emotion. You don't always talk about emotion, but all of the things that you do are about provoking emotion.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about the way most salespeople enter a conversation, they begin sales conversations at the rational, logical level with empirical evidence. They begin by pitching something or talking at the buyer. And most buyers are entering the sales conversation at the emotional level. They have one basic question they ask. Do I like you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty simple.
Or it. Do I like you or it?
Or if.
If I don't like you, I'm probably not going to like it.
Right,
exactly.
So it's just really simple. Do I like you? Are you a threat to me? Are you somebody that I should pay attention to? Are you engaging? Are you asking me a question that makes my brain hurt? You know, that type of thing. But the salesperson's going blah, 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 blah. And if you think about it, if the buyer is asking, do I like you? The least likable human behavior is talking at somebody.
Yeah.
I liken it to the Peanuts movies where the kid is listening to the parents talk and it's wah, 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 yeah, wah,
exactly.
wah, wah.
That's exactly what it is. That's what it sounds like, you know?
But let me throw something at you. The sale, from my perspective, and it has been for years, the sale is made emotionally and then justified logically.
Absolutely.
And you, if you think about it, if you're in the audience listening right now, you say, I love that dress. How much is it? Mm-hmm. I love that car. What are the payments? I love that house. What's the mortgage? You don't love the mortgage. You don't want to know what the price is unless you have an interest. So asking how much does it cost is actually an emotional question. Because I want to
Because you want to move forward.
I want to move forward. It's the biggest buying signal on the planet other than I'll take it.
That's right. And it's – you know, and it's in the way emotions drive our decisions is deeper. Antonio Damasio did one of the landmark studies on how people make
decisions.
Wait,
don't start getting intelligent on
that. It was this beautiful study where he brought people into his lab who had had the emotional center, the limbic system, the part of their brain that feels emotion, destroyed somehow or another, accident, surgery, DNA, whatever it is. But they had the neocortex, the rational part of the brain, completely intact. You know, ask them to make decisions. They could talk rationally about either side of the decision. But when they were asked to make a simple decision, something as simple as what type of sandwich do you want to have for lunch, turkey or ham, they would agonize and agonize and agonize. They could not make decisions without their emotions to guide them. And we've known, like if you go back to – we were in your library earlier today. You go back and read those early sales books. They were saying the same thing. People buy on emotion and they justify with logic. We've been saying it forever. What's different now today is 100 years of brain science and study has taught us that what these early pioneers were telling us in 1900 is absolutely the truth.
Yeah, the pioneers would use words though like be pleasing.
Yes.
You know, they used a different kind of English lexicon. In order to be able to – they didn't say know your territory. They said map out your territory.
Yes.
So it was a matter of trying to understand what it is that they were going to say. But it was still – you want to be friendly. You want to be pleasant. You want to be pleasing. You want to be – you know, to feel comfort. Mm-hmm.
So – but here's the problem, okay? So if we were to get – let's just grab – we've got 100 salespeople and put them in a room and say, do you think it's a good thing that you're pleasing? And they would all go, yeah. Do you think it's a good thing that you're likable? Yeah. Do you think that you should be the kind of person that the buyer gravitates towards, that they enjoy being around you? Everybody would say, yeah. And then we would stick them in a sales call and they would be the most, you know, unlikable
obnoxious
human being ever. And the reason is because – and this is for salespeople and this is one of the reasons why I wrote Sales EQ is that we say these things all the time. Like one of my favorite cliches is you have 2 ears and 1 mouth. Use it appropriately. It's in every sales training room ever.
Yeah.
But nobody actualizes it. Salespeople don't listen. Why? Because they have these disruptive emotions in their own, you know, and on their heart.
I don't
they get
like
in the way
cliche
of that.
I don't like those kind of cliches because they don't really tell me what to do
they
or
don't.
How to do it.
But even if you know it, like even if you know it rationally, you still got – the disruptive emotions, I want to talk, I want to feel important, I'm impatient, I'm afraid, all those things, you know, inside of you that drive that. And you talk, Jen, you talk all the time about, you know, networking events. And you see people who are in a networking event able to control their emotions and people who are unable to control their emotions.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
If you can control your emotions in a networking event.
You win.
You walk out with stuff, right?
Right.
But you spent most of your time listening to people.
Absolutely, because people want to talk about themselves.
And when they talk about themselves, how do they feel?
Amazing.
They feel amazing. They feel important. And here's what's beautiful about that. When they feel amazing because you listen to them, now they owe you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So most sales classes or courses teach about this much strategy and this much on EQ.
Yes, almost okay?
Almost no nothing,
emotion.
Right?
Yes.
Maybe there's a 10-minute thing on emotion. You just wrote this whole book on emotion, and there's chapters about. There's a lot of chapters in the book. Right?
A lot of chapters.
I like it because each chapter is short, so you feel like you're accomplishing.
It's almost 300 pages.
So what are some of your best tips that our listeners can walk away with when they're going into a sales presentation?
Well, one of the nice things about this book is that you can dive into this book and pretty much open any chapter up, and each chapter almost stands on its own, which is I didn't mean for it to be that way. It just sort of came out that way because I like to chunk things up. But for example, when I tell a story in the book about sitting in your library having a conversation about the sales process, And I'll never forget it because it was just one of those moments where, mm-hmm. you know, you said, look, let me explain this. This is a science, right? You follow the process, you're going to have a better outcome. It's that simple. And you think that you look at every single sales training class, what do they teach? Sales process.
Exactly.
And what do salespeople do? They go out and butcher the sales process. They skip steps. They get treated like buying puppets by the buyers. They don't, you know, they get fearful. They push too hard. They don't push hard enough. Those type of things. So my number one tip for salespeople is, A, you have to become aware of your own emotions. If you don't know what you're feeling, how is it possible to control that? So that begins with getting control of that. You guys have assessments that salespeople can take at Gettymer.
LearningAcademy.com, Gettymer LearningAcademy.com.
We have assessments that people can take so you can understand yourself. But there's a whole, you know, whole list of things that you can do in the book. But awareness is the mother of self-control.
Awareness is the mother of self-control. Cool.
I like it.
Cool. Yeah,
it's tweetable.
That's good.
That's
yeah.
tweetable, yes. You should tweet that. So if you have awareness, then you can begin to control your own emotions. And the only way that you're going to be able to influence the emotions of someone else is if you can control your own. And influence, to give you an example, influence is not what you say. It's what you hear. But listening to someone requires a deep amount of emotional control. And the reason is that when another person is talking, you don't feel important. The most insatiable human need.
Awareness is the mother of self-control.
Oh, man.
Period. Jeb Blunt.
Jeffrey is literally tweeting that right now.
We're going to tweet it right now. Why wouldn't we?
I love it. So, yes, but now
it's spelled B-L-U-N-T.
Yeah. No, it spelled it without the O.
I know, because that's the way. I mean, if I could go back to 2007 when I wrote my first book, I would have just taken the O out. My pen name would have been Blunt. That way, I wouldn't have to deal with that.
Yep. Oh, that's too funny.
So, I think one of the tips is you need to know yourself. The other is you have to create mechanisms that allow you to manage your emotions. If we just are realistic, we're human beings. Most of our emotions happen without our consent. In fact, all of our emotions happen without our consent. We don't control our emotions.
It's involuntary.
So
it's
do you
involuntary.
Think that when a Absolutely. Salesperson hears no or not right now, they lose that control and ability to respond? Not all of them, but many, because they're just focusing on that, or
they're like a rudderless ship in the storm, right? Mm-hmm. So their emotions take control and they move them all over the place. And what you want to be as a salesperson is you want to be at the helm. You want to have mm-hmm. complete control of your emotions. I'm not saying that you're not going to feel it. Like if someone tells you no, it's a threat.
Or your price is too high, right. Or
exactly.
whatever obstacle they may
throw. Our brain responds to two types of threats. We respond to a physical threat to ourselves, mm-hmm. and we respond to a social threat. And a social threat is being rejected, being cast out, being pushed aside, being treated with indifference, being rejected. And the neurophysical response of being threatened physically or being threatened socially is the exact same thing. Your adrenaline gets released into the bloodstream. Your stomach tightens up. Your heartbeat begins to race. You start breathing faster. And blood begins to rush out of non-essential parts of your body into your muscles.
Mm-hmm.
One of the non-essential parts of your body is your brain, because your brain does not need blood to run away.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, thinking about running away is really not in your best interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if a bear is chasing you, that serves you really, really well. But if you're dealing with a prospect and they say no and you can't think, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So for salespeople, it's understanding that so that you can see what's happening, you can get it. And we were talking about this earlier today, just before the show, but it's obstacle immunity, right? You learn how to deal with it, and you face it enough times. You learn mechanisms that allow you to feel the emotion but not be carried away by the emotion.
I want to throw my two cents in. When a barrier is thrown to a salesperson, your price is too high, I want to think about it, we need a meeting, I need a proposal, mm-hmm. the salesperson becomes emotionally upset.
Mm-hmm.
That, oh, I've just given this great presentation, and now here this guy's throwing a barrier at me. But the less upset he or she becomes, the more likely they are to be able to engage mm-hmm. further and take it to the next step. And you can't let that emotion of negative overcome what you're trying to convey emotionally positive. And either way, that emotion is transferable to that customer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They're going to get your positive vibe. They're going to get your negative vibe. They're going to get your confidence vibe or your lack of confidence vibe.
And to get scientific, that's something called emotional contagion. And human beings are masters at feeling what other human beings are feeling. So mm-hmm. if you transfer that emotion to your buyer, then they feel it, whether it's lack of confidence, what have you. And that goes back to – this is the emotional control piece. The feeling happened. You know, there's a neurochemical reaction in the body when you get disappointed. It's happening with and it's not asking you whether or not to feel this way.
It happens whether you like it or not.
Exactly. So you have to have a mechanism for managing it. So one mechanism, if I'm just asking for a next step, is something called a ledge. And a ledge is what some scientists call the magic quarter of a second. So all of the stuff that's happening when you feel an emotion happens just like that. So if you can grab just a quarter of a second to give your rational brain a chance to catch up and turn it off, you mm-hmm. win.
So you tell this amazing story at the beginning of your book.
Yeah.
About.
Yeah.
You do.
Come about, on. Once upon a time, us.
About
come on.
How someone does not let all their emotions overcome them. And maybe you can elaborate on the story. And
sure.
Yeah, we want to hear it.
It's good. It's really good.
No, it's an opening. What he's done is engaged you with once upon a time, there was a sale.
And there was almost a sale.
Well, I'm just saying.
But the price
was
too high.
Yes. Once upon a time, there was an almost sale. And he does it masterfully because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is you're telling these stories and then through the stories teaching us lessons.
Yeah, so tell the damn story.
Well, first of all, why do I tell stories? Well, people communicate in stories. That's how human beings communicate. Your buyer communicates in stories. You communicate in stories. Mm-hmm. And for salespeople, if we learn how to listen to stories, what our buyers tell us, inside the story are the emotional cues that tell you what's important to them. If you focus on the emotional things that are important to your buyer and you bridge your solution to those emotional things using your buyer's language rather than your language, you win because all of a sudden you sound like them. You're familiar. And the human similarity bias, if you're like me, I want to do business with you because you're more trustworthy. So in this opening story, basically it captures all of the influence frameworks that ultra high performers, people who are at the top of their game, use. So the story is of a guy named Art, who I know, who's an executive in a really big company these days, who told me this story about a day when he was complaining to his boss about the prices being too high. I'm sure there's no sales manager out there that's heard a salesperson whining.
It's a first. Yeah.
Deal stalled, and he can't win it. He's 23 years old, and he's just telling his boss, and he said something how am I ever going to sell anything if our prices stay so high and our competitors are so low? So his boss, who is a good leader, instead of arguing with him, says, "Come with me." And they go get in the boss's car, and they're going to see the customers. Art, he's playing, so my heart's beating. We're going to go see the customer right now. Right now. But on the way there, the boss stops by a grocery store and says, "Stay here." And he walks in, and he comes out about 15 minutes later carrying a brown paper bag. He puts a brown paper bag in the back seat, doesn't say anything to Art, and they drive over to their customer. Now, their customer is a bakery, and these guys lease – trucks. They lease transportation. So the bakery has to move their bread to grocery stores and the places that sell it. They put them back a truck. So these guys, they lease trucks. And they walk into the lobby, and his boss is sitting there in the lobby, with this brown paper bag, right, just sitting on his lap. And Art's like, "I'm sitting there just thinking, my heart's beating because I don't know what this is about." They finally, 20 minutes later, the receptionist comes in. They take him in, and the guy's name is Mr. Calaisi, and he's, Calaisi Bread Company. And they walk in, and the boss opens the thing with a question. He says, "I've been sitting here talking to Art, and Art tells me that you guys have been having a good conversation, but we're having a little hard time coming to an agreement on the price." And he's like, "Mr. Calaisi," the owner of the company, leans across the table and says, "We're not just a little bit away on price. We're a lot away on price. You guys are out of your minds. You're way too high. There's nothing for us to talk about. Unless you guys get your prices down to your competitor, we're never going to do business together. And oh, by the way, don't bother telling me that you guys are different, add more value, because as far as I'm concerned, all the trucking companies are exactly the same." So –
Well, thank you, sir.
So, Art's sitting there. Oh, my God.
That's the moment where most salespeople lose their cool, right?
But he's thinking in his head, his boss is there. "I told you so.
I told you so. Right.
So the manager had taken the paper bag was sitting on his lap, reaches down, grabs the paper bag, puts it on the desk, reaches in the paper bag and pulls out two loaves of bread. One loaf is a loaf of, you know, supermarket brand white bread. Another loaf is Calaisi Italian bread. And he says, Mr. Calaisi, I'm just curious. This loaf of bread from the supermarket costs 67 cents, and this loaf of bread that you sell costs $1.87. How can you justify charging three times as much for your bread as this bread? Well, the boss, Mr. Calaisi, the owner of the bakery company, stands up, pushes back his chair, and lectures, you know, Art and his sales manager, Joe, lectures them for like 20 minutes on why
the
Calaisi
value
bread
is
right. a better bread. You know, it's our bread's family recipe. It's, you know,
it has crust,
ingredients, across yeah. everything.
It's made with flour.
Right, when he's done,
we use water.
Better flour.
Right. And right. these guys are just listening to him. They let him lecture and let him teach him. And so he's, you know, when he gets done, he sits back down. And the sales manager, and this is like the greatest lesson that Art ever learned. The sales manager leans across the desk and says, "Mr. Calaisi, that's exactly what we've been trying to tell you. We're the Calaisi bread of truck leasing." And at that point, the owner of the company, I mean, what is he going to say? He starts laughing. I mean, so he reaches across the table and shakes his hand. And look, they still had to make a deal. I mean, they still had to work some things out.
Yep.
But they went from being adversaries to being in his in group.
No, they went from out of the sale to in the sale.
Right.
And they
right.
won the sale. They walked out with a deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the lesson there is that this is what the great salespeople use. They understand it. That was complete emotional control. And they used all kinds of frameworks there. I mean, one of the frameworks they used was listening. By listening, they made Mr. Calaisi feel important. When he felt important, he felt an obligation. That obligation was open the door for him giving them a chance. He also had to defend his bread. When he defended his bread,
he was falling right into the hole.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then they said, hey, we're the Calaisi bread of truck leasing. For him to dispute that creates something called cognitive dissonance, which is just the subconscious mental stress that you feel when you try to hold two different values at the same time. And and along the way, you know, all of these little frameworks happened that at the end, when everybody sat down, nobody was consciously thinking, this bias happened, this thing happened, this thing happened. Nobody was thinking that.
No. They made a connection, an emotional connection,
right.
And that was the key.
And it rolled through. But the science of how that happened,
undeniable.
You can follow the formula and influence anyone.
There's no sales process that would have taught you that.
There's none at all. And that's one of the problems with the sales process itself. There's three processes in sales. Mm-hmm. We teach the sales process, the linear process that you move from connecting with someone emotionally mm-hmm. all the way to negotiating a deal.
Mm-hmm.
That you skip steps in that. Mr. Gittimer here is right. You skip steps, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm rewriting the process because it has changed significantly with the advent of the internet.
Sure.
Because you have to – I don't think that you – it's much more powerful to attract than it is to try to convince.
Mm. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
I look at the new sales process as I want to attract them. I want to have enough attraction to where I can engage them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I attract and engage, then I can possibly connect.
Yes.
If I attract and I can't engage, there's no way I'm ever going to connect. So those first three things are – that's not make a phone call.
No, but you know, Jen, you said something earlier. You said, well, you know, what are your best tips? And
mm-hmm.
so I'm going to riff off this for a second. So engagement. When you look at the top 1% to 5% of salespeople, one of the things that they understand is engagement. Engagement is part of win probability. I want to work on the highest probability deals. If a stakeholder isn't engaged, I mean, when I say engaged, like if I ask them a question and they give me a one-word answer, that's not engaged. If I ask a provocative question and they don't lean forward, they don't think, they're not smiling.
They're like on their computer while you're in your sales meeting.
And they're not contributing. Like they're not – one of the CEOs that I interviewed for the book, he said if they're not matching my effort –
mm-hmm.
then we got nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, and I have to go back. So what ultra high performers are doing all the way along, they're testing that engagement. Now, you said something important. Like that is – you got to have a connection. I don't talk about building rapport. You never hear me talk about building rapport. I talk about emotional connections. Mm-hmm. Now, you have sales process. You also have buying process. The buying process is the linear process that the buyer rolls through in order to make a decision. In big companies with multiple stakeholders, it's usually something that's formal. Not everybody's privy to every part of it, but there's a formal process that the company has employed to make sure the people that are buying stuff don't make dumb mistakes. In a small company like mine, it might be – I might ask, you know, I'll be right back. I got to go ask Carrie if this is okay.
Yeah.
You know? So – but think about emotional control. How many sellers get this phone call? Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be making a decision here, like, in, you know, tomorrow. So could you do me a favor and send over your best prices? Or they call up a buyer, and I was just with a group of packaging reps, and they would call the buyer, and the buyer says, yeah, just send me your line card. So the salesperson, right? The salesperson moves from you know, engaging, trying to get an engagement, to giving a proposal. So they skip the two most important steps of the sales process, which is building the emotional connection and discovery, asking questions, where 80% of the sale is made.
So how do you slow that down? If someone just says, I want the line card, how do you back them up to
this
to
is emotional.
In order for me, Mr. Jones, to give you anything that's logical, I have to ask you a couple of questions about what happens when, so that I can act in your best interest. For example, if someone's driving one of your trucks and they have an accident, what happens? Tell me about one accident that you've had.
Mm-hmm. That's what.
And all of a sudden, the whole thing shifts to a point of, this ain't about, well, our tires have 84 pounds of pressure on them and we're going to get 9 miles to the gallon. And we have insurance. I swear to God,
you bring the emotion back into it.
Bingo. Yeah. What happened when the guy had a tree?
Ultra high performers know that if the buying process and the sales process are out of sync, they lose. Mm-hmm. And what I'll do is, someone says, listen, we just need to get your best proposal in. Or you'll call up and say, hey, we're making a decision, what have you. I say this almost every time. I say, that's fantastic. And I'm glad that you guys are making a decision. You know, most of my competitors are happy to fit you into their box. They're good with that. I just don't work that way. What I do is I build the box around my clients. And the only way I can build a box around you is to understand your unique situation so I can tailor solutions. So I'm going to need about 15 or 20 minutes of your time just to sit down with you and understand you. And then I'll come back with a proposal or a blueprint for how I'll service your business. And you can make the right decision from your business from there. I'm going to get one of three answers. I'm either going to get, okay, come on in, which tells me they're engaged and means that I'm shaping their buying process back to my sales process.
Correct.
They're going to say, well, I don't have a lot of time. Is there another way we can do this? They're negotiating, therefore they're engaged. Or they say, listen, if you want to do business with me, send me the prices.
Yeah.
If they say number three, I move on. But here's the problem with emotional control. What most salespeople do, who are A, desperate because their pipeline's thin, is they say, okay, I'll get you some prices. They stop activity. They go grab the sales manager and go, man, we got to sharpen our pencil. So they and so now they're like, they got other people involved.
But they become order takers.
They become buying process
puppets. No, Gabrielle Gittimer, who's 8 years old, can sell at the lowest price.
I love that.
Order taking connotes you actually took an order, right?
If they get the deal.
Yeah.
Right.
All they're doing is writing a quote. They stop everything, right? And then they put it on the forecast.
And they're wasting all that time and energy.
Yeah. I'm working with
Bob. They're not
likely
to get the deal.
And then they touch base, Jeffrey.
Just checking in. It's the end of the month.
What top salespeople do is they recognize that if I can't get the buyer to engage, exactly what you said, then my probability of winning goes down significantly.
Yeah.
And they're able to emotionally detach from that situation and move on.
Will the guy return your call?
Will they return my call?
Yeah. So, and then the salesperson goes to the manager and blames the customer. The guy wouldn't return my call.
Yes, right.
Like, seriously, the guy wouldn't return your call?
Fault.
Okay, great. I want to go back to your story. It's something I learned from a guy named Paul Homily. Facts and figures are forgotten. Stories are retold.
They're always remembered.
And that is the process by which you move forward. I want that. Mm-hmm. I want them to remember the story in a way that they'll say, hey, Bob, you got to come in. You got to hear this.
Right. It connects with them.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, when you're brand new, you don't know all the stories, so you have to kind of learn some. But you start building it up. And you can – the thing is that I always think that, you know, it's as much about stories as it is about language. If I listen to you and you tell me, hey, here are the things that I'm feeling – this is what's happened in my business and I'm producing a solution, I might say, Jeffrey, you know, one of the things you told me is that when Alice comes in the morning, she's getting her coffee and she's getting ready to go, and then she hits her desk and then she goes to pick up the telephone, and then it's like half the time it's working, half the time it's not working. And then you got three customers that are emailing you on the way to work and you're frustrated because Alice can't take the phone call, and all of that's happening to you at the same time. So what I recommend is what we do is this, and this. And what's going to happen is you're going to be able to slow down when you come in the morning, go get your double mocha latte with caramel or whatever on it.
Girly cup of coffee.
Yeah. and everybody's going to be happy. That's a story.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling your story back to you using your language.
Yeah.
Right.
And by the way, language is an important piece of all of this. The human similarity bias is a really simple thing. I'm more trustworthy of things that are similar to me. The thing about
so in other words, if I had a Southern accent, I'd be more trustworthy to you.
You might be, but maybe. The problem is that you're a Yankee and you're in the South. So guess what? You're not out. Getting a Southern accent.
Right.
But
he can do all y'all.
But as in the modern sales world, we don't get to pick the people we sell to. I mean, it's diversity.
So you don't even get to pick where they come from because if you move someplace to be with someone, the odds are half the people are not from there.
But the one thing that you can do is speak their language, and they teach you their language when they tell you their story. And if you listen to their language and you bridge to your solutions using their words, Alice is having a hard time. She comes in the morning. You're frustrated. You can't go get your Starbucks, blah, 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 whatever you're drinking. Death Wish coffee. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah.
So if you're doing all those things, I'm speaking language, and language is so important. Language is baked into the human DNA.
But you can only get their language and their stories if you ask them questions. And many salespeople show up and just give their spiel.
One of my largest clients, a huge company that we all know, they hired me to do a keynote speech, and I got on the telephone, called people that they didn't even give me. I called them and listened to them and had them tell me their language, their jargon, what they say. I gave a stock speech, but I used their language. I told stories from their book of stories. Like, they would tell me stories. I repeated the stories back to them. When I got done, their senior vice president came to me and said, "Oh my God, that was incredible." And a week later called me and said, "You're the only speaker that really got us and really understood us. The only thing that I changed was my language." Right. And that turned into almost $500,000 worth of business and consulting. Why? Because he said the words, "You get us."
Right.
And if you just listen to social anthropologists and they talk about anthropologists, they talk about language, they talk about the origin of human language happening. Like, we learn how to speak to each other so we could sell stuff to each other. Like, I mean, think about it, right?
I love that.
So
in the market, think about it, the early bazaars and early, kasbahs. Mm-hmm. That's
Language is – it's sales. But think about it. If, you roll back, 200 years before there was Uber and you were out in the woods – if you couldn't speak the language of the tribe, they wouldn't let you in. And it was dark and cold, and they didn't have Pizza Hut. So today, that same language is built
into – a tree fell on an Uber.
So when we learned that – now, you asked another mechanism. One of the mechanisms that ultra high performers use to test engagement is they ask for next steps. They're always asking. So when I'm sitting with a salesperson, I go, "Why isn't this deal closing? Well, Bob won't call me back." I'm like, you don't got
a
next step.
Why don't
you have a next step?
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
So if you think about
that. Well, they think that the next step is the proposal.
No, the next step is the meeting that Bob has on his calendar. If there's no meeting on Bob's calendar, you don't have a next step.
Right.
Right. Okay, Jeb, thank you so much for joining us today. This is amazing.
Hold up book. Okay.
If you do not own this book yet, what are you waiting for? Go – where should they go? Amazon?
Well, I'll tell you what. If you want the book right now, go to any Barnes & Noble store anywhere in the United States, and you'll be able to walk in and pick it up off the shelf. And if you want to have it shipped to you, you can get it at Amazon or any of the online booksellers.
Sales EQ by Jeb Blunt.
And it's a doozy.
A doozy.
It is amazing. Thank you so much, Jeb.
Thank you.
Well, that was insightful.
That was amazing. I love how Jeb starts off with, he keeps listening to our show and he's waiting to be a guest.
He's just trying to, brown nose. I actually, though.
We're just excited to have him on as he was to be on.
Right. I'd have him on every week, actually, for 10 minutes. the blunt approach to sales.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I don't want to give it to him. I have to sell it to him. But I think that.
Too late. You just did.
Oh. But I think that I have harped for years on, and he acknowledged this in the interview, I've always been a person that said the sales made emotionally and then justified logically. I don't know whether I was the first person to say it, but I can tell you that I've been saying it for 3 decades. And I think therein lies the fact that the salesperson has to understand that when they're doing a normal sales presentation, if they do not emotionally connect with that buyer, they're going to lose that buyer in the bullshit of all of their features and benefits and here's what we have and we're the greatest and we. And, you know, please buy my product because everybody says we're the greatest. Those days are over. And Jeb is talking about genuine emotional connection with the buyer. And I totally agree with it because I've been emotionally connecting with people for decades. Not for years, but for decades. My best customers are my friends.
Of course. You have all of their cell phones.
Right. And I text them day or night.
Yeah, same here.
It doesn't matter to me.
I think for providers, too. I mean, not just my customers, but people who are providing services to me. I want your cell phone number or I can't work with you.
I will tell you something else. And this is not a brag. This is just a statement. I've made six-figure sales after midnight. Mm-hmm. And
we call people back all the time after hours.
Yeah. And It blows their doors off. And second of all, and some people say, I leave it at the door. I leave at 6 o'clock. Yeah, right. That's a bunch of crap. You can't do that anymore. We live in a 24/7 world, and that 24/7 world includes you.
They're even saying now about millennials how you shouldn't monitor millennials too much at work because it's okay if they're going to be on Facebook for a little bit or they're going to be on Instagram or whatever it is that they want to look at ESPN or whatever it is. Because when they go home, they're going to be looking at work. And,
you know, there's one way to monitor millennials or any other salesperson in the world. How much did you sell this week?
Yeah.
Period. That's the monitor. All the other monitors are a bunch of crap. Well, did you make 5 calls? Did you make 7 calls?
I don't care.
No,
just
no.
Sell
if you make
something.
One call and you sell $1 million, the boss won't give a shit if you don't make 5 calls.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to the emotion part for a minute. So when I was selling Cutco and I was, I don't know.
How's that for emotion?
18 at the time.
Salespeople are a bunch of whiners.
I was selling Cutco knives. They're the best knives if you don't have one. And I, not knowing what I was doing, I was only 18. And I would walk in and sit down with the person I was going to meet with, usually the female mm-hmm. in the household,
usually.
Not to stereotype, but it mm-hmm. usually was. And I wouldn't...
You stereotype, are you?
I wouldn't ask her about her knives. I wouldn't ask her, let me see your drawer, like your knife drawer.
Let me see your drawers?
Let me see your drawers.
It's kind of an emotionally attaching question.
You know, I would ask, you know, tell me about your
Pardon
family
me,
dinners.
Mrs. Jones, but could I please see your drawers?
No, I would tell me about your family dinners. Because I wanted to know.
Yeah.
That creates emotion right away.
I totally agree.
And I didn't know that I was doing that.
We always had family dinners. I loved them.
Yeah. Did you use Cutco knives?
Actually, we sharpened our knives on one of those things, you know?
Oh, yeah. I've seen those before.
Yeah. They're back in the 50s. But I was always, you know, my humor came to me very early on. In that my mom would bring out this big roast, you know, for family dinner and stuff. And I go, wow, Mom, the roast looks great. They never knew you dropped it on the floor. And those kind of lines.
In front of like 15 guests.
Oh, yeah, all the time. And that would be something that would kind of start the humor of the meal. And it kind of got it rolling. I didn't realize it because when you're 17, 18, 15, whatever you are, you're just doing it for the effect. You're doing it so that maybe you're doing
You want to get the laugh.
You're showboating a little bit. But, you know, 50 years later, you learn, hey, like, that's the
you're
way you're
not that old, Jeffrey.
No, I know. Okay, 42 years later, that's how it was done. And I just did it naturally. I thought that humor was the basis for making people feel good.
So it's not just about finding the emotional connection. It's also about
humor's emotional.
Creating the humor to find it.
No, humor's emotional. When someone laughs, that's an emotion. When someone cries, that's an emotion. And I'm looking for the smiley part. I'm looking for the emotional engagement part. And then when I got into sales, I found that if I could make them laugh, I could make them buy. Chapter 8, Little Red Book of Selling. And that's the whole deal.
We're going to go from Sales EQ to a new segment we're calling Sales IQ.
Ooh.
It's brought to you by the Gettymer Learning Academy.
That's a good sponsor.
The virtual sales training from the king of sales himself.
That would be
go to GettymerLearningAcademy.com to sign up for your free demo and you'll get to meet with me. Here's how this will work. Each week, we'll ask a question from Sales Caffeine, Jeffrey's free e-zine, which you can sign up for at Gettymer.com/e-zine.
The email magazine's been there for 12 or 15 years. Just go for it.
Have you ever missed a week?
Huh?
Have you ever
no,
missed a week?
No, never missed a week.
Cool. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. So what do they need to do, Jeffrey? Tell them.
Well, all you have to do is you email your answer to sellordie@gittimer.com. If you're correct, you'll be entered to win a special prize. It will not be a trip to Paris. It will be smaller than that, but it will be bigger than a bread box. So let's take a look back at last week's question. Doug, what do we have?
Which of the following best describes why networking is so important? Is it A, it allows you to get to know existing and prospective customers in a relaxed atmosphere? B, it allows you to have more people know who you are and what you do? C, it allows you to brag about how much better you are than the competition in a non-threatening manner? Or is it D, it allows you to get out of the office and not be bored so much? For the correct answer, we'll go back to Jeffrey.
The answer is A, it allows you to get to know existing and prospective customers in a relaxed atmosphere and find out how you might be able to help them or serve them. Or, and this is what I used to do, I used to try to find people that they might want to connect with. So I became a connector at a connecting event. So a guy was a printer and another guy needed printing and I would bring them together. A guy was a sales coach whatever I could possibly do for somebody else, but especially services like ad specialties or places where you could advertise or places where you could hold an event. I'd love to get those people together with other people and give them business. I became a service provider or a sales provider.
You're known as the person who's giving out referrals.
Yeah. So
exactly.
when people would call me on the phone at random during the week, they would go, "Hey, do you know anybody?" And that was my introduction, and that's how I made long-term friends.
I think that's pretty cool. You know, recently someone told me they don't think networking is important.
Oh, they're idiots.
And I said, really? Do you not need to better your
meet
relationships?
People?
Do you not need to? Well, I already see those people.
Oh, God.
I know. It's crazy.
Okay, so.
All right, so here's next week's question.
Oh.
While researching a company, you come across some bad press about the organization.
Ooh.
You should immediately, A, let the customer know you know about the bad press, but you understand there are two sides to every story. B, call the customer and ask them to explain what happened. C, research the information and see if it affects your product or service. Or D, stop the process because of potential risks to your company. Here's what to do. Send your answer to sellordie@gittimer.com for a chance to win a special prize. And hint, hint, you can find the correct answer on Tuesday.
Ooh.
By signing up before Tuesday for
Wait,
Sales Caffeine at gittimer.com/ezine. Also, we'll reveal the answer next week on
and
the show.
And we will award the prize in the mail.
That's correct. It will be a mailed in, well, maybe a mailed in prize or a digital prize.
Might be a digital prize.
That's correct.
So.
But wait, Doug, what do they need to do to get that modern muffin? Because you got me hungry now. I'm just thinking about those muffins.
Yeah, so to get the modern muffin giveaway, all you have to do is go to iTunes and search for Sell or Die. And then rate and review the podcast. It's a short little review. And make sure to include your email address so we know who to send that prize to. You'll be entered to win a chance to win a box of modern muffin, delicious and nutritious muffins.
Oh, yeah. They are the world's best muffins. And I can tell you from my own palate.
So thank you for joining us on Sell or Die. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or whatever you use to get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die. Rate and review us on iTunes and you'll be entered to win. Just make sure to include your email at the end of the rating.
So why don't you follow us on Twitter? I'm at Gittimer. I tweet myself at least two or three times a day. And at Jen in any minute, Jen in any minute. And on Facebook, we're about the same. I'm facebook.com/Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm a public figure there or something. Jen, Facebook is facebook.com, Jen in any minute, for more information from Sell or Die.
Our producer is Doug Branson.
Who is
Branson.
Our producer? I want to know.
Doug Branson, Doug Branson.
I demand to see him front and center.
And our technical director is Chris Hill. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm reminding you to get out there and sell, even if your ass falls off.